Well, weeding and fertilizing can be a little bit of work, maybe a lot of work, but they can pay dividends for your lawn or pay dividends for your garden as well. My guest today has some great advice to get your grass looking great, your garden looking great in particular, be it the vegetable garden or the flower garden. We'll also talk trees and shrubs. Larry Mueller here. Glad to have you along again on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this edition of Garden Talk. We welcome back Lisa Johnson, horticulture educator for UW Extension in Dane County. And Lisa, thank you so much for stopping by. Appreciate it very much.
Thanks for having me on.
What kinds of questions are you getting this time of the year?
Well, before I left the office this morning, I got one on Eastern Tent Caterpillar.
Oh.
But we've been getting... the gamut of questions. Weed ID, we've had some problems with gypsy moth now in the county, emerald ash borer, lots of things about vegetables coming up, and
so the whole gamut.
Yeah, the usual.
The usual. Well, I tell you what, there's a lot that we can certainly talk about. Lawns, this time of the year, things are growing pretty well with the lawn, I think, for the most part.
Yeah, the rain came at an opportune time. It was pretty dry this spring. Yeah. We didn't have a whole lot of snow over the winter, and so things started out pretty dry, but I think we're catching up, and lawns are looking good. We've had our first crop of dandelions, of course, for the year.
Yeah.
So, things seem to be going pretty well.
Well, Dan in Manawa has a question for you, so let's go right there. Thanks, Dan, for calling. Dan, are you there?
Uh-oh,
we lost Dan. Well, let's try Linda in Ottawa then. Linda, hello.
Hello, how are you?
Great, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, my grandfather had a beautiful lawn, and he had it rolled regularly.
Yep.
And I've been reading some lawn care books, and they never discuss rolling. I don't even see them in the hardware stores anymore. Well, so how do you roll your lawn?
Yeah, or do you need to roll your lawn? That's the issue here. And I think most of the time we don't need to roll our lawn.
Yeah, if you have a lot of, if you have moles or something that have caused some... you know, tunnels and raised hills on your lawn, that's a good reason for rolling. Or if you have had some erosion and so you have some low areas and some high areas, then you might need to roll it. But in general, we do that only on a newly, you know, new lawn that's just been started and... Mm-hmm. Generally, for an established lawn, you wouldn't really need to do that. But sometimes they will do that. You generally need to rent a roller if you don't, you know, most people don't have one.
No.
What it is a great big cylinder that is used to roll lawns and
like you
iron
fill
out
it with water
areas.
Or whatever,
yeah,
to make
right.
it heavier and
yeah.
so forth.
Mm-hmm. But generally, it isn't something we do on a regular basis.
And actually, I think it can be. I mean, if you've got just a few holes or bumps here and there, it's probably better to throw some soil in there and
right.
maybe some seed in there.
Yep.
And even it out that way, because the roller, the last time I talked with somebody about it, he was saying, well, it can compact.
Compact, yeah.
And you really don't want your lawn compacted. It
right.
can be bad, tough on the grass.
Yeah. In fact, for compaction, what we typically do is aeration.
The opposite?
Yeah,
almost.
Right, exactly. But if you had a lot of mold damage, I could see doing rolling.
Mm-hmm.
I live on top of a moraine. It's a big pile of rocks with a thin layer of soil, and I get a lot of rocks heaving up through the ground and a lot of erosion, and it makes croquet pretty darn eccentric.
I bet. Goodness.
But rolling, it's not going to help.
The rocks.
That's
yeah.
not going to help. The rocks are going to heave up anyway.
What you might want to do is when you're fertilizing, instead of using a conventional fertilizer, you might want to use compost over time. Doug Soldat, one of our lawn specialists, has talked about using compost. Now, you use sifted compost, and you only use about a quarter of an inch, but if you keep using it over time, that will help build
the depth
soil.
Of the soil.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you have you had another question, didn't you, about apricot trees?
Yes, I have a gold cut apricot tree.
Yeah.
And it's always bloomed very early. This year it didn't bloom, and the new growth is red. And I wondered what's going on with it there.
Yeah. That doesn't sound too good.
No.
Okay. Well, so because apricot trees bloom pretty early, they often get frosted, and then you don't get, of course, the fruit. Are you growing yours mostly as a flowering tree, or I'm not sure what zone Ottawa's in?
Well, like I said, I'm on top of a moraine, and it was kind of a little, I don't know if you watched The Simpsons, but one time Lisa got a peach tree for her birthday. And so I got my son an apricot tree so he could play with it.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So it doesn't sound like Linda has desires are necessarily for...
Fruit. Yeah, that's good because, I could see that... That tree would probably have a pretty challenging life. So with apricot trees here in Wisconsin, in the Madison area, they don't often live very long because they're kind of at the edge of their range. And so sometimes we don't get too good of fruit production. What I would say, if it didn't bloom, did you by any chance prune it last year?
No.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. I had thought that because it forms its flower buds the year before, and so if you prune it at the wrong time, you can end up pruning off the a lot of the flower buds. But if it didn't bloom at all, then I'm wondering if it was under some kind of stress last year that caused it not to... produce many flower buds. Some fruit trees are also alternate year bearing, so you get a lot of flowers one year and a lot of fruit, and then the next year you don't get much. So that's another possibility for what might be going on with your fruit tree.
The red color is
that indicates stress to me.
Yeah.
The other, it could possibly be disease related. But I suspect that if it isn't leafing out very much and the leaves are red, that you may have some kind of disease issue going on.
Yeah. Yeah. Something to think about.
I'm not sure what the structure of your area is in terms of having, you know, a university that you could go to. But
we have UW and... WCTI, right down the road.
Oh, okay. Well, so if you check in then with Wisconsin, wait a minute now, WCTI is Wisconsin.
Waukesha.
Oh,
okay, so you're not in Ottawa, Canada.
No.
Okay. All right.
All right. Well, then you're in Waukesha. All right. So Waukesha.
Yeah. Anyway. You may want to check in with Kristen Krakowski there in
at
Waukesha
the UW
County.
Extension.
Yeah. At UW Extension and see what she says about apricots in your area.
Yeah. That's probably the best. So look up UW Extension and Kristen Krakowski will. If you have a photo, even if you're going to email her, you can have if you have a photo of the tree to send along with it, that would help maybe her make
a better determination of what's going on.
Good luck. Thanks for calling. Larry in Rice Lake, it's your turn. Hi, Larry.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have a question. It's a little bit of a follow-up on a program you had earlier this spring regarding apple trees and how to stimulate them to blossom more.
Yep.
And I do understand trees have good years and bad years, where they produce a lot perhaps one year and then they get tired and don't produce.
Yeah,
so I understand some of that, and I have some older trees that do exactly that, good years and bad years, but they always have a fair amount of fruit on them. So these younger trees I have, which are what everybody loves now, is Honeycrisp. Mm-hmm. One's 5 years old and one's 6 years old. They've grown very, very well. They're larger than I expected. And ever since they were 3 years old or so, I've been getting maybe two or three apples on each one from the result of maybe five or six blossoms. You know, I'm checking every day for new blossoms. And one of the discussion points I heard but didn't catch maybe a how-to or a link or a book to read about, a method is to bend down the branches to apply force to them and then perhaps stake them with a rope to the ground, but that's kind of all I caught. It sounded kind of interesting. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, we have a great publication that's called Training and Pruning Apple Trees at the Learning Store. And it does talk about some of those techniques. A 60-degree angle between the branch and the trunk is thought to be the most fruitful, according to research. So what you probably heard a little bit about was tying or using weights to bend down the branches a bit. Now, you don't want them at a 45-degree angle or pointing down. That doesn't tend to encourage the carbohydrates pooling in the appropriate place. But that is something that you can do. If you do have trees that tend to bear in alternate years, and that's common in a lot of the older varieties of apples, making sure that you're thinning at the appropriate time on years when the trees are bearing heavily will allow them to store up more energy to kind of even out the production of fruits during the off years. So that's another thing that you can do. And we have a publication at the Learning Store that's called Growing Apples in Wisconsin that can give you some information about what time to do your thinning and how to do your thinning for that sort of thing.
And the Learning Store, it's if you go online to learningstore.uwex.edu. That'll pop up right away, and it's a pretty easy. It's a nice site. It's a pretty easy search.
Yeah, there is.
Can you repeat that web address again, please?
Sure, LearningStore, all one word, .uwex.edu. And you just Google that, and then there's a search box, and if you put training apple trees, or if you just type in apples, it will bring up all of the apple publications, everything from growing apples in Wisconsin to good cultivars for Wisconsin to information about the pest control, et cetera.
Well, I appreciate the information on that website link. I'm anxious to check it out. And the timing, I want to try that bending over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, why not? Give it a shot.
Yeah.
What's the time of the year that you would do that?
That is best done in spring, so now would be fine.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
You may not see any results this year, but the thing with apple trees is that you want to keep them thinned and pruned so that you get good light penetration into the center, and you also get good air circulation, and both of those things will help with fruit production, although it's something that happens over time. You're not going to see results probably this year.
And you'll get a sort of a visual idea of that from looking at the publication.
Yeah, it's got good pictures.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks
You're
a
welcome.
Lot. For calling, Larry. Appreciate your call. Talking today with Lisa Johnson, horticulture educator for UW Extension in Dane County. I'm Larry Mueller. Cheyenne Lentz, our on-air producer for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Next week at this time, Neil DeBole joins us to talk about native plants on our Garden Talk program. Right now, visiting with Lisa Johnson, horticulture educator for UW Extension in Dane County. Join in at 800 1-800-642-1234. Post on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And I see we have some. We'll get to those. We have a photo from on the left side of a page with a tree that another Lisa would like to have identified. And we'll get to that in a moment. But first, let's turn to Dan in Manawa, who we lost earlier. Dan, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, Lori and Lisa.
Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
I'm having problems with getting anything to germinate. And I've been gardening for years, and I've got them in peat containers. And I'm going through my second session of it, and nothing germinates this year.
What are you planting?
Well, this is kind of weird, but I do Datura.
Oh, okay.
And the seeds actually came from China, so I don't know if that's an issue or not.
Because I
realize they're a poisonous plant, but they're beautiful.
Oh yes, I see them at garden centers quite often. I'm trying to remember whether those require a cold period or not. Have you grown them before?
Yeah. For you, well, usually I buy them from plants. But this year I was trying from seed. I ordered them through Amazon. But I've also got some nasturtiums, and they're not germinating either.
Okay. All right. Well, for the Datura, I would have to look that up. But I think that Datura does need some kind of cold period in order to get the seeds to germinate. Now, nasturtium.
Well, we've surely had that here.
Yeah, but what I mean is you might have to refrigerate them for 2 or 3 weeks before the seeds will germinate for you. But I'd have to look that up to be sure. But I thought there was some kind of protocol like that with germinating Datura seeds. Now, nasturtiums generally need soaking overnight or at least.
I've done that.
You have done that, and they're still not
germinating. But this is a new nasturtium for me.
Okay.
It's a yellow climbing
sure.
Nasturtium. It's not the normal colored ones.
Yeah.
But they're not germinating either.
Okay, is this older seed or is it
a new
packet? It's a new
packet.
Brand new.
I just bought them.
Huh. What does it say on the packet for how long it should take to germinate?
7 to 14 days.
Okay, and you've had them for?
Well, this is my second planting now.
Okay.
And nothing's peeking out of the ground yet.
Okay.
Or out of the pot.
Okay.
Out of the pot.
Yeah. Okay. I was just going to say.
That's at a loss.
Yeah. If you soaked them overnight, and usually those germinate pretty well. What you might want to do is talk to the place that you bought the seed from and tell them.
You might have gotten a bad batch.
Yeah.
It's the only thing I can think of. Because you're doing everything
right.
Sounds to me like you're doing everything right, Dan.
Yeah.
So, all right. Check back with them because I think you may have gotten...
Yeah, it might be that they got some bad seed and that other people have had the same problem. So,
yeah, so it's worth going back and checking with them. Don in Pittsville, your turn. Hi, Don.
Yes, I got a question about sweet corn.
Okay.
I planted two rows. You know, I always plant, you know, a couple of rows, then I wait another couple of weeks, you know, and so on. So I get, you know, corn at different times, you know.
Yep.
But I planted some 2 weeks ago. And less than half came up, and I was wondering what I was doing wrong. Was it too early to plant or what?
Is that the time that you usually plant sweet corn?
Yeah, usually.
Are you planting it in the same place that you usually plant it?
Well, I got the same garden, but I always kind of
you
plant
rotate
it on one end 1 year and another end the other year.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Is this a new variety for you?
Yeah, well, I got it. It's new seed. I got it from Jung's this year, and it's the real sweet kind, you know. And somebody told me, you know, that sweet corn is a lot fussier than field corn in planting. If the soil, you know, isn't just warm enough or something like that, it doesn't come up as well. And I did plant it at a time when we didn't get all that rain like we're getting now. But whatever did come up is about up an inch, right? It's about an inch high already, but only half, but less than half came up.
Have you had problems with corn rootworm before?
No,
or
I
cut worms?
No, I can't say I have. No.
Huh. Not sure what the story is with that. It's possible that the temperature wasn't right, but usually I would think at this time of year that would be less of an issue. You put it in. Let's see, where are you located again?
Pittsville.
Yeah, it's right in the center of the seed.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I would think the ground would be plenty warm enough time.
Oh, yeah.
I would check with the place that you got it from and see whether anybody else has reported issues.
You might even go back and look in some of those rows and kind of dig around in those spots where it didn't come up and take a look and see if the seed's there.
Right,
That's the other thing.
Yeah, I do definitely recommend that. Have you had any problems with cranes or anything else that might be eating the seed?
No.
Okay. Yeah.
I'd still dig up a hill or two and
See if the seeds are still there or if they're rotten or what the story
what they look
is.
Like. Yeah, at least that's worth a
worth a
shot.
Try.
Yeah, worth a try. Good luck, Don. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in too at 800-642-1234. Mark in Eau Claire has a question. Mark, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, I live north of Eau Claire, and the garden I've got is pretty gooey. There's quite a bit of clay in there. And what I thought about doing was trying to break it up by adding some sand to it. But I had a person say that, no, that's not a good idea to add sand to that because you'll actually make it harder. So is it a good idea? Is it a bad idea?
It's a bad idea. I would not add sand. But
unless you want concrete.
Yeah, right, exactly. No. But I would add organic matter, and that could take the form of compost or composted manure or leaf mulch or something like that. That's what the soil scientists recommend for making hard clay soil more easily dealt with, so improving the tilth of the soil.
Okay, so if I could get a hold of like some composted manure or something like that, how much would you put on in a year's time to turn around and till in? How long is that going to turn around and take to build this up?
Well, you're going to need to do it every year for a while to get it to be better in terms of drainage and improving that organic matter content. What I would do is recommend that you send a soil sample to the soil testing lab in Marshfield and have them, you know, tell them what kind of crops you want to grow on it, and they will give you a recommendation based on that as to how much organic matter you need to add.
Okay.
I can't really tell you, you know, because I haven't seen the soil or have a soil test to work from exactly how much you need to add. But if it's that bad, if it puddles after it rains and it doesn't drain very well, you'll probably need to add quite a bit of it.
Mm-hmm.
But when I try to water like pepper plants or tomato plants that I've put in after they've been there for a while, you have to break up the ground just a little bit on the top because it puddles and pushes it back. It's just like a slimy surface on the top.
Yeah, it needs a lot of work.
Yeah, it does. You might want to consider as an interim measure growing plants in raised beds for a few years or container.
I'm experimenting this year with some straw bales.
Yep.
Good.
Yep.
And on it, see how that goes.
Yeah, that's a really good thing to do because it's probably going to take a couple years. Is this a new subdivision by chance?
We built a home in a derelict old farm field.
Okay. So, still, if it was a farm field, wow.
The garden was new to us probably 4 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
Huh.
So.
Yeah, add organic matter that, and definitely get a hold of the Marshfield soil test lab.
And in the meantime, the straw bales is a good way to go. My straw bales are looking, my vegetables on the straw bales are looking pretty good, except pepper. For some reason, I've got a...
It's been cool, you know,
yeah.
Except for the past couple of days when we got those 90-degree yeah. temperatures, so...
Yeah, so my pepper plants aren't looking as good as in past years, but the tomatoes are looking just fine, so...
Yeah.
Thanks again, Mark, for calling. We... have another call from Mark in Wauwatosa.
Different Mark.
Different Mark. Hi, Mark.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, thanks for calling.
I'm hoping that this is an appropriate call for your show. It's about an aspen tree, and I'll make my story as short as possible. I had a aspen tree put in by a landscaping place about 4 years ago, and the tree was pretty big. It was like, you know, 15, 16 feet tall when they put it in. And they use that, I think it's called mics or something, around the tree ball and that. And it was doing great. Until this year, something happened at the end of last year, and I heard a different guest on your show, Larry, and I can't remember his name, but I had a root that came over the top of the aspen tree on the bottom, and I cut it off because I had that problem on a big maple tree, and it was kind of choking the tree up.
Mm-hmm.
So I cut that root off. Maybe it was maybe like 3/4 inch in diameter.
Yeah,
so.
Girdling root.
Yeah, and then this year there was another root kind of on the top, and I went across with my lawnmower, and the lawnmower kind of whacked up that root. So anyway, that's my deal with that. Anyway, but what's happening is now the top leaves. The leaves aren't coming out on the top, and some of the other branches are getting real kind of thin and just looking really bad, you know.
Yeah.
And the place came out that planted it and said, it's because of the herbicide you put on your lawn. Well, I didn't put any herbicide on my lawn, so I'm kind of confused as to what might be the situation there. I know it was real dry and everything this year.
How many years ago did you put this on, plant this tree?
4 years ago.
Yeah, that's just about right. You've got girdling roots is what you've got, probably.
Yeah.
Most likely.
I'm wondering if it was planted too deep is what I'm wondering.
Yeah.
Does it go straight into the ground like a telephone pole, or is there a flare at the bottom?
No, it's straight down. They dug.
Planted it too deep.
They must have dug probably a 3.5-foot deep hole.
Wow. Okay. So if the tree is planted too deep, then what typically does happen is that we will get roots that are searching for oxygen because the root flare is not at the top of the soil where it should be. And so you will often get roots that are pointing in the wrong direction and curling around the trunk and... were you there when they did the planting?
Yep.
Did they leave the wire basket on and the burlap?
They took it out of whatever wrap was there, and I believe they took. I might even have a picture, but I believe they took the burlap thing or whatever that, you know, the netting thing. I believe they took that off as well.
Good.
As far as I can remember, they did that. But
yeah, okay. Well, you might talk to them and have them come out and take a look and see if they can find the root flare. Because if there's no root flare, then it was planted too deep, and that can cause issues with the tree. Also, though, aspen is not a long-lived tree, and it's very disease-prone. It also tends to, you know, it grows great in places like Colorado where we don't have, really hot summers. But here it often has some issues. So you might want to check if the company that you planted is not willing to do that, then you might want to contact a certified arborist. And I would advise going to just Google Wisconsin Arborists Association and get a certified arborist out there to take a look at it.
Yeah, I think you've got some root girdling. There's a whole, and
host
4 years
things.
Is just about right
for
that sort of thing to
start.
To occur is usually a few years after the planting.
Yeah,
so,
unfortunately.
So good luck, Mark, and thank you for calling. Speaking of trees, now we have a photo. I don't know if you can see.
Yeah, I can see it.
Is that an ash tree? The person is, Lisa's wondering, what kind of tree is that? And I can see the leaves very good. Is it an ash?
No, it's not. It actually doesn't look like a tree.
No, you know what? It doesn't.
It looks to me like something in the Apiaceae family,
the
carrot family. So I'm not sure whether it has a woody base that's why they're thinking it's a tree.
I don't know. Lisa may want to give us a call.
I need some more detail on that shot.
You're right. It does not really look that much like a tree. Anyway... It's if we may need some more information, so you might have to call us.
Yeah.
Let's turn to Don, who's calling from Illinois. Don, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi. When I buy field corn, they guarantee the germination at 98%. We have found that not to be the case with garden seed. We have had some very long discussions about this, and we ended up like green beans. We leave a short section, let it go to seed and save our seeds, and we get almost 100%, and we just can't get that out of the package.
Hmm.
Whether they're storage or they're keeping it too long or not testing it. Corn is especially bad. We have searched and searched until we find a good sweet corn that we like and that will grow. We found a lot that won't. You know, you plant 20 seeds and get 5 plants.
Yeah.
So we are seed saving our spinach, our lettuce, our green beans. I have some 1860 peas my ancestors brought from Germany. We save seeds from them. And we get almost 100%. So I'm saying with the guy with these corn, I don't know what to do but shop around. But I hate to rain on somebody's parade, but...
there are problems with germination.
And, right. And, of course, with sweet corn or any corn, because it's wind-pollinated, you can't save the seed and, you know, end up with the same variety unless you go to great lengths to make sure that it only, you know, gets pollinated by the variety that you want. And that is one problem with growing sweet corn around field corn or even just regular corn is that you can end up with kernels that, you know, that are not what you were looking for. So
yeah.
I recognize there are a lot of problems with growing sweet corn, especially some of the super sweet varieties. They need to be separated out, et cetera.
Don, thanks for calling. I want to go back to our Facebook page. There's a photo from Brianna who wonders if this is apple scab. She's pointing. We sprayed for apple scab in April. Do you need to spray more than once?
Yes, you do, but I'm thinking that looks more like plum curculio, which is an insect that attacks...
not only plums, but apples as well.
Yeah, plums and apples. It looks like that. I can't quite tell from that shot, but they usually make a kind of a crescent-shaped... thing.
Doesn't quite look like scab to me.
Yeah, it doesn't quite look like scab to me. Usually that doesn't cause the pitting like that. So I'm guessing that's what that is. If you go to the learning store and search for apples, we do have a publication on pests of fruit trees. So you might want to check that out.
And the learning store in Cheyenne, by the way, went online to our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show and posted it again. We've mm-hmm. had it up, but it's to get to the learning store, just online to learningstore.uwex for UW extension, really. So it's mm-hmm. learningstore.uwex.edu for, of course, education. So learningstore.uwex.edu. There you go. But I think you're right on target there, Lisa. Let's go to Dawn in Wauwatosa next. Hi, Dawn. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking the call. I tried straw bales for the first time this year, or I'm trying them. And yesterday I noticed, in addition to my squash and tomatoes, I have a crop of mushrooms that have sprouted in the uh-huh. dampness.
Yeah, and that's so perfect.
Yeah.
well.
The mushrooms are there breaking down the straw. That's pretty common that happens.
Actually, it's a good sign that the bale is really working.
Yeah, it's breaking down. Larry's actually had more experience than I have with actually growing in straw bales. So you've probably experienced that.
I have that in all but one bale, and that the one bale I was worried about because I
didn't have any mushrooms. Yeah.
on it. So if you have a lot of mushrooms, Dawn, you're probably doing something right. Or is it taken over, or all you've got is mushrooms?
No, they're not. But I was wondering whether they were poisonous and whether I should remove them. But it sounds as though it's a good thing to have them.
Oh, it's a good thing to have them.
Yeah, I wouldn't eat them.
I wouldn't eat them.
Okay. Okay.
But yeah, if they're growing over some of your other plants, or if they're growing into plants like lettuce that you harvest the foliage for, then feel free to take them off.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't let your kids eat them.
So.
It's a good sign that the straw is breaking down.
How are your plants looking in the bales?
Very nice. I just put them in about 2 weeks ago.
Yeah,
oh, great.
They're doing fine. So thanks very much for the good news.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Dawn. Appreciate it. Lisa Johnson, horticulture educator for UW Extension in Dane County, our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks so much for joining us for this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller with my guest Lisa Johnson, horticulture educator for UW Extension in Dane County. Call us at 1-800-642-1234 or go to our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. If you've got a photo you want to put up, well, that'd be fine too. We have, Ruth in Fitchburg to clarify a photo for us on Facebook from Lisa. Hi, Ruth.
Hi.
Yeah.
The plant is in my backyard. Plants.
Oh.
They're definitely not trees.
Yeah.
I think Lisa may be on the right track when she says they're in the carrot family, but they are not wild parsnip.
No.
And they're now, some of them are 6 or 7 feet tall, and they're beginning, they've got a cluster of flower buds at the top. And if they're in the carrot family, I know they've got a long root.
Yeah. Often plants in that family are poisonous. I was wondering if it might be hogweed, which is an invasive.
I was afraid of that.
Yeah, that's a possibility. I can't see enough detail on it. But if you want to email me at my office some more close-ups of the leaves. Yeah, that would be helpful.
She did take more pictures. It was just... she thought she should only send one.
Yeah, maybe send another one.
You want to give me an email address?
Sure. You ready?
Yep.
Johnson, Johnson, .Lisa.
Capital J?
No.
Okay.
So Johnson.Lisa at County of Dane, that's all one word, no capitals, .com.
County of Dane.
.com.
.com. Okay. She's at work right now, and I don't do Facebook, so we'll have to wait for her to be available. The leaf is kind of ferny looking.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, that
surprised me because I hadn't seen a parsnip that looked like that.
No, it isn't parsnip. I'm quite sure of. But
okay. So I was thinking maybe I would cut them off and then dab Roundup with a brush on the ends of the...
That's what I would advise you to do. And I would advise you to wear gloves and don't compost it.
Okay. Okay. Yep.
Good luck.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, Ruth. Thanks a lot for calling. What a nice photo on Facebook, by the way, from Jonathan. He says, I love the show. I'm listening to Garden Talk right now, and I love the conversation. Currently working with the Northeast Wisconsin Land Trust. We're restoring parcels of land, and this week we're working on reintroducing native species on one of our preserves. It's the Guckenberg Sturm Preserve near Appleton. I don't know that I pronounced that right, but... I wonder if we just mentioned to listeners, invite them to come and get involved if you're in that area, starting about 10 o'clock this Monday and Wednesday. So, probably the easiest is just to go to our Facebook page. If you're in that area, why not, and have some time, why not look into it? It's a nice photo.
Yeah. Restoring parcels of land is great.
Yeah.
Volunteer activity to do. I'll certainly encourage all master gardeners in the area to look into that.
Yeah, absolutely. We have more callers online. Evan and Madison up next. Evan, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. So my question has to do with raised garden beds.
Mm-hmm.
We currently have built three pretty generous raised gardens. They're all 10x4. And so we're trying to figure out a cost-effective way to fill them, you know, with a good medium. And so we've got access to right now is about 5 yards of this really good garden mix. And then what we're trying to decide is what would be a good thing to supplement that with so that we get enough volume. And we've thrown around the idea of just using some straw. There's also this idea of like Hugel culture. I don't know if you've heard of that, where you just take pieces of old, dead, rotting wood and put that in the bed. But we're basically just trying to get the volume that we need.
Okay.
And I'm wondering what would be a good thing to add to that garden mix that we already have.
Okay. So is this a commercial mix that you have?
Yeah, this is a local company. It's called Purple Cow.
Oh, Purple Cow.
Okay.
Wonderful
Great
stuff.
Great outfit.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's what we're going to use.
Okay. So that you got a is it a compost mix or is it a potting soil mix or
it's their I don't even know what they call it. It's what they sell it in bulk at Madison Block and Stone.
Okay.
And you can get three grades of it. The stuff that we're getting is, I guess, soil less. So it's all
okay. Great.
Vermiculite, bat guano, worm castings, yada yada yada.
Yep.
Okay. If it is very light, you could add some composted manure to it.
Okay.
If it is heavier, then adding the straw would be what I recommend. The thing with raised beds is you don't want the mix to be too heavy because of issues with it compacting, as it tends to do in areas that are restricted, like a container or a raised bed. So you don't want to use anything that's real heavy. But if it's a soilless mix, then you may want to add something heavier, both to provide nutrition as well as the volume that you were talking about.
Okay, so if it's on the heavier end, we can use straw.
Yeah, and I'd try and chop up the straw just so that it breaks down faster. And if not, if it's real light, then adding some composted manure. I wouldn't add, you know, like half. I would add like a third maybe or a fourth.
And I'd watch where I got my straw from, too.
Yeah, yeah. The thing with straw is that if it isn't clean straw, then you might end up with a weed issue.
Seeds. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, we've got two full compost bins full of stuff that I suppose I could just dump that in.
Another thing you might want to look at if you're trying to lighten it up and just add more volume is rice hulls. You can often get them in quite a large bag at a farm co-op. And those are really, really nice for adding some bulk.
Yeah.
Rice hulls, did you
yeah,
say?
Rice hulls. Yeah.
Rice hulls. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right, great. Well, thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks, Evan, for calling. Appreciate it. We have Brian in Waukesha up next. Hi, Brian.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Hi.
Good. I just purchased a home, and there is a it was professionally landscaped, so I know that the plant next to the front steps is a globe spruce.
Mm-hmm.
And it's 20 years old, basically, and it's pretty big. I just want to find out, A, how much bigger it's going to get. It's about 8 feet tall now. And B, if there's a way I can prune it without killing it. I know spruces don't like being pruned too much because it's kind of overgrowing the walkway a bit.
Sure. You can prune spruce, although you have to be careful about where and when you do it. We have a publication that is on Brian Huddleston's plant disease diagnostic site, and it's called How to Prune Evergreens. And I would, because it has some pictures on there, I'd really recommend that you take a look at that. I think we've kind of passed the time of year where you can do that for this year. You would basically prune back to a lateral bud. And the problem with like doing that on pines is that they don't have any lateral buds. They only grow from the ends of the branches. But because spruces have some dormant buds that are a little farther back, you have to look for those. So what I would do is just Google PDDC for Plant Diagnostic Clinic, and then UWEX, and that should come up. Look under fact sheets, and if you scroll down, I believe it's under H for how to prune evergreen trees and shrubs.
Okay, very good. And how big do those things actually grow?
Oh, if it's just a plain globe spruce and not a particular variety that's supposed to be dwarf, they can get quite large. They can get over 5 feet.
Yeah.
Yeah, it already is over 5 feet.
Yeah.
Okay. Right.
You've had it for a while then. Yeah.
Yeah. The landscaping was done in 1997, according to the the plot that I found in the house when I bought it. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, almost 20 years ago. So.
Yeah, that's going to be a challenge.
Yeah, it will be. Good luck, though. Thanks, Brian, for calling. Appreciate your call. Jim from Eau Claire wondered, how do you get rid of a lilac bush if it's just taking over? Or I wonder if he wants to...
Is he wanting... Well, he
get
says
rid
get
of the
rid
whole
of,
thing
yeah,
or
just prune it.
Or just make it smaller.
Yeah. Lilacs are suckering shrubs, so they do form thickets over time. But if you just wanted to prune it back, you could still do it at this time of year and take it back to, say, 3 feet or so. If it's a if it's not like 20 years old or something like that, it will come back from the base. But if you're just trying to get rid of it, then I would cut it down to the ground and I would paint Roundup on the cut stump. And I would use a concentration of Roundup that is got at least 20% active ingredient in it. And you would just take a paintbrush, use it straight from the container, and paint it on the cut stump soon after you make the cut.
Otherwise, take out a third of the very largest, or you could probably even go more.
Yeah, right. Right at the base, and then take it back to about 3 feet, and and that should promote it coming back from the base and take down the size.
So that's a good way to do it. Let's see. We have accidentally over, Dan in Mount Morris said we accidentally over-fertilized our garden with 10-10-10. The plants have turned pale green. Is there a way to correct this? Pale green doesn't sound like...
That
doesn't sound
like over-fertilizing.
No, it sounds the other way.
Yeah. But if you, I mean, sometimes you can get that kind of symptom, although usually you would get the leaf turning white or really dark green. But I mean, you can water the heck out of it and hope that it'll leach, the material down past the root zone. I don't know. That's a tough one.
If it's turned pale green, usually that means that it didn't get enough fertilizer.
But yeah, typically that's what the story is. I guess I need more details on how much you used and why you're thinking that you may have over fertilized.
Yeah, it's something to think about here. Our guest today, Lisa Johnson. Lisa is a horticulture educator for UW Extension in Dane County. And I just did want to mention again, for a lot of the publications we've talked about, it's at the Learning Store, and we have that posted up on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. But just go online to learningstore.uwex.edu. That's learningstore.uwex.edu. And there are lots of great publications there to help you. For Garden Talk, I'm Larry Mueller. We're off to a great start for the gardening season. We've got flowers and vegetables and lawns all growing pretty well across the state, although there are the usual sets of problems that Lisa Johnson deals with all the time. Lisa, our guest today here on Garden Talk, I'm Larry Mueller, by the way. She is a horticulture educator for UW Extension in Dane County. And Lisa, thanks again for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
Appreciate it very much. We had an email from Cindy in New Berlin who said, I'd like to try straw bale gardening. This process, which I've heard so much about. However, we have black walnut trees on two sides of our garden and within 25 feet of it, which have caused me the typical wilt problems over the years. Will this method allow me to use this garden soil for tomatoes, peppers, and so forth again? Well,
no.
The straw bales,
the straw bales, you can definitely, but don't put that soil in the straw bale if that's what the question is. But you can certainly use straw bale gardening. I wouldn't plant the straw bale garden right under the walnut tree, under the drip zone of the walnut, but you can certainly use straw bale instead of planting in ground.
Yeah, if you plant it under the drip zone, then when it rains and so forth, you're going to get some of the jug loan. So, but if you can get away from that, should be just fine.
Yeah, but don't use that as garden soil.
No. Karen and Seymour, your turn. Hi, Karen. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a lot of different fruit trees: apricot trees, plum trees, cherry trees, apple trees. And they do really, really well. And I haven't ever used, the pesticides, you're supposed to. And I get such good fruit that I want to make sure that they're as healthy as possible. And I'm wondering if you have any organic treatments that I could use on the trees to maybe protect them from pests.
Sure. There are organic treatments for both fungi and for insects. The best place to go to read up on that is ATRA. I never remember what it's like alternative technologies, something or other, but it's capital ATTRA.
Okay.
And if you Google that, they have a list of organic techniques to use with every kind of fruit and vegetable that you can think of.
Fabulous. Thank you.
Yeah,
so
the
much.
Apples one in its own is to like 28 pages long.
Yeah, a lot of detail.
But some of the things, just to detail that a little bit more, there are various sulfur compounds that you can use to combat apple scab and powdery mildew and cedar apple rust. And then there are things like kale and clay,
okay.
which is a non-toxic clay that you mix up with water and you spray on the trees. It makes your trees look like they're covered with cement, and you do have to remove it at the end of the season. But I'd say if you haven't had a lot of pest issues, that what you need to be more concerned about is monitoring, so that if something suddenly does strike, that you have an idea of what it is. And
we've regenerated this farm a lot, and we have hummingbirds and all sorts of things, and I want to make sure that I don't do anything to prevent that from happening, because I really like having all
sure.
the critters.
Yeah.
Sure, why not?
Sure. So there are traps that you can get for the major apple pests, which are coddling moth, apple maggot, and plum curculio are the big three. There are certainly others, unfortunately, mm-hmm. but if you haven't had a lot of issues, I would just make sure that you have traps up so that you can monitor the pest populations for those three. And what you really might want to do is subscribe to the Wisconsin Pest Bulletin. It's a free online resource that comes out every week, and there's a fruit section, and they have contributing orchards that tell you what they've seen in their traps lately, so that you get an idea of what's flying, what's at peak population, etc.
Okay, thank you so much.
Yeah, sure.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Sounds like an ideal situation
yeah,
so far.
Boy, that's really amazing.
Stella in Sturgeon Bay, your turn. Hi, Stella.
Hi. I just wanted to make a small addition to the in your advice to the gentleman who called in about his heavy clay soil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he's going to try growing in straw bales this year.
Yeah.
Well, I understand that you can grow in straw bales for 1, maybe 2 years until they rot down to the point where they can no longer grow.
Right.
And then
you can
add them to
add
garden.
That to yeah the soil as well.
Yeah. That
yep.
was it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah.
And you know, that second year, I never what I've done with the straw bales, the second year they're
start
just not going
to
work.
Apart.
They're falling
yeah.
apart. So I put them all in a big pile this year, this spring, the ones that I had from last year. I put them in a pile, and then I had some seed potatoes. And I just lifted the pieces of the pile and threw the seed potatoes in.
Oh, that's a good idea.
And now I've got
potatoes coming out everywhere.
I've got potatoes coming out everywhere out of that pile. And that was the whole planting. The whole planting of that took, I would say, 1 minute. Oh, man. Yeah, it was
so
really.
So you've got a potato heap instead of
I got a potato pile.
Yeah.
Kathy and Ashland, your turn. Hi, Kathy. Kathy, are you there? Oh, well, it's Kathy. So let's go to Gail in Fish Creek. Hi, Gail.
Hi. Hey, I'm wondering if you guys can share anything about the mushroom fungus pesticide that gentleman has created and he got a patent for. And it would mean that we wouldn't have to use chemicals anymore. His name is Paul Stamets. He's got fungi.com. He got a patent on this, and it's supposed to be, like, really good stuff. And there's been just little things about him here and there in the product, and I'm wondering if you guys can share anything more, because so many of us would like to do things as much as possible and get more people to not use any pesticides or chemicals, you know, and things. And this sounds like it's really helpful.
Huh. You know, I don't know a thing about it. Fungi.com.
I haven't heard about it either.
I'm going to have to.
Oh, he's the founder. It's called the Michael Pesticide LLC, and it's supposed to be, can they consider it a smart pesticide? And I guess it's going to start to shake up the world because it's like uses a universal bio something, and he has a way that a patented thing that he does to mushroom fungus that turns it into this pesticide that doesn't harm the environment and gets rid of these bugs.
Is it for insect control or weed control or?
That's what I want to find out more detail about it. And I thought, you know, maybe you guys would know something about it. And if not, oh, get on it and let's talk about it next time.
Yeah, you know, well, so it's fungi.com, right?
Yeah, fungi.com. His name is Paul Stamets, S-T-A-M-E-T-S. And this is interesting as the guy in Pittsburgh that does the new pit moss, he calls his stuff, and it's peat moss made with recycled papers shredding, and then he does something to that, too. He's got a patent, and he does that. And he sells that now, I guess, to a lot of nurseries and the big commercial ones to use for that the pot moss instead of what they normally
have been using.
Sure.
Well, fungi.com, Cheyenne, we're going to have to take a look at that website and see what we'll look into it.
Yeah.
Talk about it on another edition of Garden Talk. Thanks. Gail, always interested to learn something new, and there's always new things coming out. That's
there
for sure.
There certainly are.
Fungi.com. Chris in Elkhart Lake, your turn. Hi, Chris.
Hi. I'm looking for some advice on the best sort of root stimulation for transplanting ferns from a friend's yard to a new location in mine. I have them well mulched in a semi-protected area, but I'm afraid of them needing some sort of starter fertilizer.
What kind of fern is it?
Well, I'm not sure what you would call it. They're probably 4 to 5 feet high. They're very tall. They were in a large clump area along the side of a garage. And I don't know how else to describe it. To me, they look like the ferns you find in the forest if you're walking on a trail or something.
Most of them, you know, when you divide a perennial, generally we don't want to add a whole lot of high nitrogen fertilizer because we want the roots to get established, and that tends to stimulate more foliage production. So I would say just keep it watered is the best advice that I can give you.
Okay. Do you know what type of soil they prefer?
Usually most ferns will prefer a somewhat acid soil, but if you're transplanting it from a friend's house to your house and you live in the same general area, probably you have the same soil pH. And even though they prefer usually slightly acid soil, usually they will do well they're not all that fussy.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. We have an email from Amber in Thiensville. We have a few young ash trees that volunteered in their yard. They're about 15 feet tall. They don't treat them. We don't currently see any issues with these trees, but wondering if we should remove them to ensure that we aren't contributing to the emerald ash borer issue. Can leaving untreated ash trees in your yard make the general emerald ash borer problem worse?
Yes, it can. But that being said, I'm trying to remember what county Thiensville is in and whether it is a county that has had an EAB find in it. If you live in a county that isn't currently considered infested, then I wouldn't bother to take them down until you have an infestation that is 15 miles away. Generally, that's the recommendation that we give for treatment or for taking the tree down. That being said, though, also, if you are someplace where there hasn't been a find and you aren't anywhere close to a county with a find, those trees may get a bit taller and harder to, more expensive to remove if you wait.
Yeah.
So I will have to let you make the decision on that. But a website that you might want to look at is the state EAB website. If you just go to your internet browser and type in EAB Wisconsin, it should come up. It's through the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. And it's a really great site that's got everything from identifying ash trees to the life cycle of EAB to which counties are infested to not moving firewood, all of that stuff.
Lots there. Michelle in Prairie du Sac, thanks for calling. Your turn. Hello.
Hi. I was calling because I have a 6-inch diameter maple that was run into by a car. It was probably going 45, 50 miles an hour. Hmm. And it took off the front part of the, you know, more than half of the bark at the bottom. So it girdled it.
Oh,
and right now, I mean, this happened in the fall. And right now, the tree itself looks like it's full. But I have a feeling that, you know, it will probably die.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to know if there is fertilization the answer, or what should a person do for that?
Well, first of all, if the area that was hit is ragged around the edges with the bark that came off, trimming that up so that you have a cleaner surface will allow it to try and seal that area over more easily and provide less of a area for pathogens to get in. So
okay.
That's one thing that you can do. If the area is as big as you say it is, I am not sure that what the long-term survivability is of that tree.
If it's 48%,
yeah.
I mean, it might make it.
How much? You said 40 or 20?
Did you say it was 40?
What did you say? What percent? Oh, of the tree.
Yeah,
in
if
the
it's
front?
40,
okay, yeah. More,
percent.
It's more than 40% of the tree. Yeah, its bark is gone in the front. It's like where the bumper came and hit it. It
yeah.
totally took it all off.
The thing that I'm worried about is, you know, if we have a dry summer, something like that, it's going to be really hard for the tree to be able to supply all the water needs of the branches. It's probably looking okay right now because we have enough moisture in the soil and it's able to kind of make do with what we have. But when you get into the hotter, drier part of the summer, you may start to notice some dieback.
And you're going to have to water. If you want to keep it.
If you want to keep it, you're going to have to keep it watered. What you might do is, you know, kind of see how it goes for the next couple of years. And, you know, if you do notice dieback, then you may want to remove it and start over.
You may get some on the.
Yeah, you probably will get some.
Yeah.
So doing like a fertilizer treatment to the roots, would that help it or not really?
That's not really going to help it, no.
But watering.
Okay. Yeah, watering definitely will help.
Yeah, it's too far away to water.
Ah.
We have a long driveway and it happened
gotcha.
At the end of our driveway, the 500-foot driveway to water
the.
Yeah.
That's going to be tough, I think, to keep that going.
Yep, the Darwin theory is going to work on that.
There you go, Michelle. Thanks a lot for calling. Oh, boy. Kathy in Ashland has a question. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
I believe I have in all of my perennial gardens a very dangerous plant called cowbane, C-O-W-B-A-N-E.
I don't know the plant.
That's not one I'm familiar with either. Is that the same as hogweed?
I don't know. They say it's almost as dangerous as the, what is that other one? Hemlock, poison hemlock.
Okay, so it is in that same family then, that carrot
yeah.
family.
Yeah, and we have a lot of it.
Okay.
And we've been weeding it, and I've looked it up on the internet and get, you know, I'm 99% sure this is what the plant is. It,
okay.
It really looks like it, and I don't know what to do.
Oh.
you know, I've stopped touching it. We're not weeding it anymore. It's taking over. It's getting really tall.
Yeah, if you use gloves, you should be able to do that. But you could also, is it among your other plants?
It is. Okay. It is among the other plants.
And is it growing in a vegetable garden or perennial garden? Or
no, perennial garden.
Okay. What you might want to do then is spray it with Roundup. That would be...
Yeah, I just did that. I just did that today, as much as I can get to.
Yeah.
Some of it I can't get to because it's, you know, intermixed with my other perennials. So... I don't know. I wish you knew what it was so you could tell me what to do. On the internet, it says, you know, wear a hazmat suit, wear, throw away your gloves when you're done, throw away your clothes.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, I don't know whether to put it in a bag, and then what do you do with it?
You might want to make sure that what you've got is actually that, and you can get an identification, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, your county extension office, if you send some photos of the leaves.
You're in Ashland.
Yeah.
You know, I have, and I haven't heard back.
Okay.
When did you do it? I'm surprised he didn't call.
Yeah.
I am too. So
if the person's out of the office, though, for a week, you know, that's not.
Yeah, maybe he might be gone.
He's a very good agent.
Yes, he is.
Yeah, Jason.
Jason Fishbach. Yeah. I'd try again because Jason will know.
Yeah. Whether that's it. The other thing that you can do is you can look on the DNR's website, and they have an area about treating invasive species with herbicides and which herbicide is the best to use for a particular species. So if that's it, you definitely don't want that around.
No, that's for sure. In fact, you should probably alert if you mail it and say this may be cowbane.
Yeah.
I should do what?
Alert in the, you know, on the outside of the package if you mail something or send something.
Oh, yeah.
So people don't just
don't
open
handle
it up.
I have a lot of it. I think you guys should look it up because if I've got it, other people do. And
I
thought maybe it was Queen Anne's lace or something, but it's not. I've looked carefully.
Yeah, there are a number of plants in that family that look very similar. So I know wild chervil is becoming an issue, and wild hemlock can also. That's a pretty scary one.
Yeah. Well, check very carefully every part of the plant, and it's just what I believe it is.
No, I'd still check with Jason.
Yeah.
And thank you very much for calling, Kathy. I'm sorry. Well, that's another one we'll have to look up. I wrote down cowfungi.com, and now I've got to write down
Cowbane
for something else to
Be a common name for something that I am familiar with, and I'm just not familiar with that common name. It's hard to know. A lot of these things have different common names.
And you know what? We are about out of time. Didn't that fly by?
Yeah, no kidding.
Oh, and there's so many questions we didn't get answered, but you know what? I guess that happens every week. I'm sorry we didn't get to everybody, and on so many Facebook and email, we got to a lot of them, but there's still many more there. Lisa, thanks so much. I look forward to your next visit. Appreciate you being with us so much. Lisa Johnson is the UW Extension Horticulture Educator for Dane County, and always great to have her with us, and she will be back and do it again. Monday at 11, we talk with author Patricia Skalka. She's got a new novel, Death at Gill's Rock. And then at 11:45, another author and an old friend, Victoria Houston, talks about her latest mystery, Dead Rapunzel. It'll be fun. You stay with us in the meantime. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.